I've known, a man that is tough and smart, a man that's running against somebody that's never done a damn thing in the Senate, Mr. Jason Lewis.
No, stay seated, everyone. Please. No more applause. Okay, keep it coming. Keep it coming. It's good. Hi, everybody. Jason Lewis here in today on WBT for Brent Winterbull. And what an intro. Thank you so much, all of you, both of you, who were applauding there. You know, normally I don't watch The View every morning, but today I just wanted to watch it to see what Liz Cheney had to say. Yeah, the new panelist on The View. Okay, it hasn't happened yet, but you know that's coming. Man, oh man, talk about failing up. What is it with these never Trumpers? They have this uncanny knack of losing, and then that somehow gives them the gravitas for people to listen to them even more. So Liz is all over the network news today, naturally. The media love nothing more than a scorned Republican. And that's what Liz represents now. She represents the Bill Kristol, Max Boot, never Trump Republican, the Mitt Romney crowd that has taken the Republican Party to depths of which they've never seen, only to be rescued by America First and Donald Trump. And so after yet another victory, what is it, 8 out of 10 now in the primaries? You've got 8 out of the 10 House renegade impeached Trump types that are gone. Their political careers are over. Oh, yeah, I know. Liz thinks she's the second coming of Abraham Lincoln and is going to run for president. But, you know, bring it on. At some point, they're going to have to realize that this repudiation. What is the latest tally? Tommy, anybody know? Is it 37 points? Something like that, that she went down by? Now, I don't know how much media gaslighting you have to do, but you can't cover a 37-point defeat. You can't cover it. I mean, how do you run that up? You knew the end was near when Liz had her dad running these commercials on national television for a Wyoming House seat. In fact, the only House seat in Wyoming. Well, why would you be running on national television for a single House seat? Because you know you're going to lose it, so you might as well appeal to a larger audience in these sort of quixotic hope for a presidential run. Which gets us to 2024, does it not? And we're going to talk a little bit about this. We'll talk about the raid. We're obviously talking about Cheney's ignominious defeat. I may even talk a little bit today. You know, I'm not just a former congressman. I'm not just the author of Party Animal, The Truth About President Trump, Power Politics, and the Partisan Press, a new book that's out by yours truly that you need to read, because in it, I predict everything that's happened. I'm not saying I was prescient, but I was prescient. I'm not only those things, but I'm also an Elvis aficionado. And this new movie, Elvis, well, I just wrote this piece on Substack the other day. It's a great movie. I actually liked it a lot, but it is politically correct. The new and woke Elvis? No. I'll give you the rundown on that too today. So we're going to have some fun today. So much to do, so much to talk about. 704-570-1110. You know, that's the same number, Tommy, we had when I was at WBT. If you don't know my background, I started out in Denver when I was in graduate school in talk radio. Then I matriculated, as Hank Stram used to say, of the Kansas City Chiefs. I matriculated down the field or up the field to WBT in beautiful Queen City of Charlotte in 92 and 94. I was even there when Hancock was there. And Hancock's about 114 now. Is that about right, John Hancock?
114, 115, I think.
15? Okay, I stand corrected. No one's perfect here, Tommy. Hancock's now 115. I was there when he was there, and then I came back for a three-year stint in 03 to 06. So my WBT roots and my love for the Queen City go back some time, and so I can't tell you how much fun it is to be back on the air on WBT and to be able to talk with you. Literally, this is the great thing about talk radio. Still, long-form radio. You don't get it in a podcast. You don't get it with a snippet. I get to talk with you each and every, well, not each and every day, but today. All you have to do is call 704-570-1110. As I say, Liz Cheney, talking point. We've got the raid, the fallout there, and boy, is there a fallout. Man, oh man, is there almost an hilarious fallout. Now, I was in Congress. You know what the first thing I said when I, in 2016, I ran with President Trump, and we were both victorious. And I won in a very tight race, very swing district in Minnesota, where I live now. And I will tell you, the first thing I thought of the next morning was, I demand a recount. What have I done? But I got there, and I saw in the bowels of the bureaucracy the tainted nature of our civil service system. And when I was running for the U.S. Senate in 2020, again with President Trump, he and I talked about civil service reform. People think, if you want to know where this raid comes from, if you want to know how the National Archives could be tipping off the FBI that Trump's got these documents, we just have to have. Pay no attention to Sandy Berger and that bulge in his trousers. It's not what you think. No, no, that was okay. Hillary Clinton's email server, that's okay. But Trump actually might have taken things he declassified to Mar-a-Lago. You got to do something. Now, how would they be so political? Because they are unaccountable. You got 2.5 million federal employees. You know how many come and go with a new administration? What we call Schedule C employees? About 3,000 to 4,000. So politicians like myself may come and go, but the bureaucracy stays. And here's a newsflash for you. The bureaucracy is a bunch of woke, never Trumpers, lifelong Democrats who are going to instill their agenda regardless of the will of the people. And that, in a nutshell, my friends, is why you need to clean house. And I mean clean house. Back on News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT with the talk host formerly known as Congressman Jason Lewis. Glad to be in for Brent today as we carry on with all of the post-defeat analysis over the Cheney race in Wyoming. The Trump candidate's doing very, very well in these summer primaries, which really tells you where the country is. And it's not about the idiosyncrasies of President Trump and people like his aggressiveness, or they call him a narcissist and that's why some people like him. That has nothing to do with it. It is the policies of America First, of which I helped implement in Congress, that have basically captured, or the American people are now enamored over these, the idea of taxing foreign consumption instead of domestic production. Lowering income tax rates, and if we have to raise revenue, we'll tax China. The idea of ending these crazy endless wars, which benefit what Eisenhower warned us about, the military-industrial complex, and what the Cheneys have been dealing in for their time in Washington, get us involved along with Democrats in more of this nonsense. The idea of finally getting a hold of a border that, as we found out this week, is totally out of control. 1.8 million arrests in the last year? No nation is a nation that doesn't have secure borders. Those are the things that are captivating the America First voter and why the Trump candidates are doing so well. The media focus on Trump, the personality. The voters are focusing on a country off the rails under Joe Biden, and they want it back. And they want it back. And I will tell you, you know, these never Trumpers out there like Cheney and the rest of them, they are basically spitting into the wind, because these are the same people, if you recall, that said, oh, remember the 11th commandment, thou shalt not talk ill of another Republican. Remember that when the Bushes were running? Remember that? Well, I don't know if these Bushes are really concerned. Oh, no, shut up. You got to vote Republican. You got to be a good 11th commandment Republican. And then it was John McCain. Well, McCain's kind of a liberal on a number of issues and sort of a New York Times, what he has to do to get a good headline sort of politician. No, shut up. 11th commandment. Thou shalt not speak ill of a Republican. Those were the people that gave us Bush and McCain and Romney. And now they're the ones trashing Trump, violating their own commandment. Isn't that amazing? It tells you all you need to know about the political integrity or lack thereof of the Never Trump crowd and the Lincoln Project, those perverse, literally and figuratively, group of individuals that run that outfit. So there's so much to talk about today, so little time. So let's get right to it. It's 704-570-1110. First up, Mark, you're on WBT with Jason Lewis in for Brent Winterbull today.
Yeah, hey, Jason. Thanks for taking my call. I heard you made two comments about Cheney this morning on the interviews and then the civil service comment, and they both resonated. I want to give a quick call in.
Sure.
But, yeah, the Cheney one, again, preaching to the choir, making an obvious comment. But can you imagine if Hageman was like a liberal, like a Democrat, and ran against her, and there was this huge comeback of 60-plus points? You know, the fact no single media, mainstream media, the Today Show or whoever, interviewed her, right?
Yeah, isn't that something? They don't interview the victor?
I tell you, Mark, it's almost
as if the media are biased.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just so obvious. It's like, I mean, any person that pulled that kind of upset off, particularly if they'd have been a Democrat, I mean, they would have been on every show, right? But anyway, that's my first comment. And the second one I had to mention, your civil service reform, definitely vote on that one. And the non-obvious thing to a lot of people that I've met over the years, and I was in the military between the military and then civil service guy in various groups for about 12 years in the late 80s and 90s. Most people don't realize even if you are quote unquote, first of all, most people think a lot of the people are really hardcore conservative Republicans, right? And that was not my experience in 10 plus years.
Right.
A lot of them are rhino types.
And by the way, that's also true in the military anymore. I think the rank and file troops are pretty solid. But you take a look at the Pentagon and what you have to do to climb the ranks at the Pentagon, those folks are political animals.
Well, the point I was going to make, and I lump them together. I mean, I lump them together. But the whole system's is entitlement, right? I mean, the military, yeah, and the way the pay is structured, the way the comp structure, the way all the per diems are structured, everything is for, you know, your health care, free health care,
right,
everything. People in the military over a period of time, and certainly in the civil service, really fall under an entitlement structure. So, it used to drive me bananas. And
I'm confused, Mark. You're telling me that people who get paid by the government and then get a defined benefit plan, not a defined contribution plan, a defined benefit plan after 20, 30 years, you're telling me they come to like government? I mean, I'm shocked here.
You're being sarcastic, right?
I am.
Yeah. But it's funny. There's a lot of misconceptions. People that haven't been involved in those environments or know people in that environment, that they don't realize that. And you know, back in the early days, and I was an engineer, back in the early days, it used to be the trade-off in the civil service as an engineer that it's like, oh, okay, well, you won't get paid very well, but, you know, you get a month plus off, you get all these benefits, yep, et cetera, so that's the trade-off. You really don't have to work hard, and you don't get paid much. Well, let me tell you something. Buddies of mine that stayed in the civil service jobs, fast forward 20 years later, and I mean, they're senior level. Several of them are SES level. These guys, they're working even less. They even have more time off. But these guys, in general, pulling down $200,000 plus in salary and benefits. So back to the reform comment, it's not even a case where, you know, oh, woe is me, we're being paid under market. You know, if we had stayed in comparative jobs, these guys are being way overpaid, and they're doing practically nothing. And the things that are getting done are being outsourced to third parties like the Lockheed Martins, what we used to call Lockmart. And that goes back to
the... I got to move, Mark, and I want to get to David and Tim, too, but those points are all very good. The Manhattan Institute has summed it up nicely. State and local employees enjoy a 44% hourly pay premium over the private sector. (704) 570-1110 The contact line is always for the Brent and Wirrable Show. I am that talk host, formerly known as Congressman Jason Lewis, but more importantly, formerly known as an ex-WBT talk host. In for Brent today. So glad to be here on WBT and back in the Queen City once again. So give us a holler. We've got David and Josh coming up. But before we broke last time, I mentioned something about cleaning house. You take a look at the its totality, the raid, which we don't do to ex-presidents. We don't, in a free country, the victors in an electoral contest don't get to put their vanquished in jail. Might happen in Stalinist Russia, the Weimar Republic. It might happen in Venezuela, Nicaragua, when the Sandinistas were in control. You name it. But it doesn't happen in a free country. So if you look at the raid and the corruption of the DOJ, and it is corrupt. In fact, down the road today, we'll probably talk about whether we should abolish the FBI. And people are talking that way, Victor Davis Hanson, among others. But if you look at cleaning, draining the swamp, that's the reason I wrote this book I've been shilling for the last month. I wrote this book called Party Animal, The Truth About President Trump, Power Politics, and the Partisan Press because of what I saw when I was in the 115th Congress. It predicts, almost with a scary tone, what has happened with the J6 committee, with the lack of due process, with our liberties being taken away, and then when we complain, we're labeled domestic terrorists, with the raid on Trump. In that little book of mine, Party Animal, I write this. The weaponization of a permanent bureaucracy on behalf of one-party rule, including a national security apparatus working hand-in-hand with a sympathetic media, is the greatest danger freedom faces. Now, I finished this book last winter, but what I saw with the FISA warrants, the spying on President Trump, the endless charade of a false Russian collusion being perpetrated by CNN, who, if they didn't have liars on television, would have no anchors, would have no bloggers. You've got almost a prerequisite to work at CNN and Vox and The Atlantic and MSNBC. Are you a liar and are you a good liar? Yes, you are. Step right this way. This is what I saw, and Trump wanted to clean that up. He called it draining the swamp. And he started to do that by establishing a Schedule F in the civil service workforce. Basically, what that meant was Trump issued an executive order that would have reclassified more federal employees so they could be fired or held accountable if they were making policy. Not if they were working at the post office. Those are career employees. But if they were making policy, DOJ lawyers, anyone? They should be held to account to the president. He was elected. Well, guess what Joe Biden did? He rescinded that executive order first thing so he could let the bureaucracy. He doesn't need to coordinate. Biden says, I didn't know about the raid. Well, of course not. A, even if he did, he forgot it by now. But B, he doesn't need to coordinate. He knows the bureaucracy, the swamp, will do his bidding. And that's why these people are so terrified of Trump. And that's why you need him probably more than ever. Different times call for different leaders, my friends. And Trump isn't an aggressive leader. He's got his idiosyncrasies. But who else would you have fight these people? We're dealing with a band of squad-like extremists that are hell-bent on overturning our way of life. Who do you want to fight them? Mitt Romney? Mitch McConnell? Are you kidding? 704-570-1110, Jason Lewis here, alongside David in the Queen City. Welcome to WBT and the Brent and Wirrable Show.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
I'm good, David. How are you?
Good. Welcome back to the neighborhood.
It's great to be back. Always great to be in Charlotte.
I wanted to first thank the fine folks of Wyoming for taking out the trash last night. That was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was. What was the final tally again? Was it 37 points?
Yeah, something like that. It was a landslide, what I read, anyway. So,
well, I think that qualifies as a landslide, just a little bit outside.
Just a little bit, yeah. But what I called about and I talked to your screener about is that with the recent activity of the DOJ and everybody in Washington, you know, it's no surprise that nobody has got to be really looking at fair elections. When I asked my friends to answer this question, you know, what percentage do you think of the District of Columbia voted for Hillary Clinton or voted for Joe Biden?
And 96%. Nobody can
tell me. And they say something like, oh, maybe 60% or 50% or what have you voters. And I let them know approximately 94% of the District of Columbia voted Democrat. So do you think we're going to have anything fair or anybody looking at election tampering or anything like that?
And that's the end game, by the way, as well. You're, because the jury pool is so fundamentally tainted in the District of Columbia, that is why the FBI field office and the DOJ executed the raid from Washington. They want to bring an indictment in the District of Columbia because they know they could indict a ham sandwich, including Trump, there. Now, it won't last on appeal, but that's all they want is a headline, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's really true. It's corrupt there. I was there, and you're not going to get a fair shake. We don't have equal protection under the law in the District of Columbia. And by the way, speaking of the election, I just want to posit this because we go from A to Z too often without touching anything in between. And by that I mean the January 6th committee assumes a fundamental point. Now, obviously, they're not going to investigate the raid or whether FBI agents were in the crowd like they were in Michigan trying to entrap people. They're not going to investigate Ashley Babbitt's death and all of that. They're investigating the election protesters, the insurrectionists, right? But let me just posit this question to you. Why don't we investigate first whether or not we had election integrity under COVID voting rules?
Right.
Because if you did not, what is a president or anyone supposed to do if there is a problem with voter fraud?
Right.
Ignore it?
Well, yeah, you can't. But it's being ignored very much so. And until we get the House back and the Senate back and the presidency back, nothing's going to change. And I'm glad to see us whittling through the establishment in that process anyway on our side of the aisle.
You got it. Thanks, David. And by the way, the January 6th committee ought to stay in force after the election and start investigating things that matter. That would be refreshing, would it not? Oh, man, I'm digging these bumpers here, TJ. Pretty good. This one goes back to 73, I believe, back when Pete Callender was still only 25, 26, something like that. I'm not 100% certain about that, kind of like Hancock's age. I don't know. You know, WBT, they care about their senior citizens. I want to tell you that right now. 704-570-1110. Back with the guy that's the most senior of all of them, Jason Lewis, doing for radio what Hunter Biden has done for laptops. I have no idea what that means, but I just came off the tip of my tongue here. Let's go back to the phones here on this Wednesday. And Josh, you're on WBT. Hi.
Hello, Congressman. How are you today?
You know, I couldn't be better.
Yeah. I just wanted to make a quick point, about what you were just talking about previously, about draining the swamp. You know, I was starting to lose faith in the system, the voting system altogether. And what happened yesterday actually shows, a positive. And, you know, with Liz Cheney and all, hopefully not going to be in office anymore or not holding office ever.
Well, let us hope let's hope you're right, because and this is the real danger of censorship, by the way, Josh, because what the Democrats and what I call in my book, Well, and I know you're going to get it, right?
Yes, sir.
What they have done is basically made it taboo to talk about election integrity. Otherwise, you're an election denier. And what they really want to do is they want to keep the COVID voting rules that don't. That, so we don't have an election day. We have election months. In Minnesota, where I live, over 60% of the votes were by mail, absentee ballots. Now, even Jimmy Carter admitted that more fraud and more problems can occur under that system than anything else. So we have got to address that issue. Now, I'm hoping you're right that yesterday was a start, but that has to be addressed. We got to get out from under these COVID voting rules.
Yes, sir. That and every Republican getting involved in local candidacy or congressional elections, and you know we can make a stride to you know head towards a positive area.
Right. You are 100% correct as always, my friend. Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you, Congressman.
You bet. Thank you, sir. Marty, you're up next on News Talk 1110-993 WBT.
Jason, it's wonderful to hear you again, and miss seeing you, but we got a good replacement here, and you guys are both great at what you do. Hey, one statement before I get to my question. Can't wait till the Butthead and Camel Dung show is all over, but, you know, this guy, Merrick Garland, you know, declaring these mama bears domestic terrorists, you know, that just says something. If you have a fear of these mama bears, just goes to show you how wheezy you are. But here's my question. President Trump never conceded the election, so, and also he opened up the office of the 45th president of the United States. What are your thoughts on legitimately, legally, even though he might be just in waiting right now, is there a possibility that he is still legitimately the president, the 45th president? And
no, there isn't. There isn't. Once the Congress certifies the election, that is done. What we need to focus on, as I mentioned, is going forward, making certain that we have things like voter ID, that we undo these consent decrees that were perpetrated by corrupt secretaries of state with liberal activist groups to count votes late or not to match to the voter registration system, all of those things. We got to correct this thing going forward so that the next time we have a crucial election, we can have a hell of a lot more confidence.
Thank you very much. That was an excellent answer, and I appreciate it. We're involved locally. Thanks a lot.
Keep doing what you're doing. That's what you have to do. You know, I'm just thinking. And I talk about this in Party Animal in a chapter called The Reckoning. In fact, there's two chapters that are relevant to today's conversation. One chapter is called The Real Swamp, in which I talk about the civil service crowd. And by the way, it's not just the feds. Feds have 2.8 million when you include the Pentagon, 2.8 million employees. But if you look at state and local government employees, you're looking at 20 million people. They are not conservative activists. Now, that doesn't mean they all aren't or all are a bunch of BLM progressives. But if you work for the government and you've got a sweetheart pension plan from the government, you're going to do what it takes to defend the government. And that's why we get a swamp. It's the natural order of things. Even average human beings would come to support that sort of thing. And by draining the swamp, you get the politics out of it. You cannot have a politicized bureaucracy that does not answer to anyone. That becomes one-party rule, and it's a hallmark of oppression. And that is precisely where we are with the DOJ. And next hour, we're going to talk about this raid and so many questions has to the false procedures. It should have been a subpoena, not a warrant. Has to why it wasn't expedited if there were nuclear secrets involved. And what in the hell is wrong with Merrick Garland? And I'm a former member of Congress, but I'll say it. Garland is corrupt. Merrick Garland is just plain corrupt. And he's further corrupting the DOJ, labeling parents who are concerned about, you know, hormone therapy for their kids in schools. They'd like to do it. Don't get me wrong. They're already teaching them trans ideology. They're teaching them CRT. They're teaching them Antifa. So parents are upset. And all of a sudden, Garland says, domestic terrorism by these parents is the single greatest threat to the country? Merrick Garland is either corrupt or he's living proof we haven't won the war on drugs. But I'm telling you, it is a very, very serious issue. I'm Jason Lewis in for Brent Winterbull today. We'll get to your phone call, 704-570-1110, when we come back. Stick around right here on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT back after this.
Is tough and smart, a man that's running against somebody that's never done a damn thing in the Senate, Mr. Jason Lewis.
No, no, no. Stay seated, everyone. Hold the applause. Well, we've got lots to work to get to here today in the second hour of the Brent Winterbull Show on News Talk 1110 WBT. I am the talk show host, formerly known as Congressman Jason Lewis. My thanks to the president for that wonderful introduction. Nice of him to do that, don't you think? This whole obsession with Trump is so disturbingly disproportionate. Pardon me. I feel like Joe Biden at a speech. It's bizarre. If you think about it, all of the things that we have to worry about, and I'm not just talking about everyday matters like a border out of control, 1.82 million arrests. I'm not talking about inflation on the march, and it's not just gasoline, it's everywhere. You're talking about healthcare out of the reach of average citizens, which is why they had to subsidize it even further in the Inflation Reduction Act. You're talking about, need I say China? In the supply chain crisis. It's not just those everyday things that are making life miserable right now under this Biden regime, but it is the weaponization of force. Remember, as George Washington once said, government is not reason. It is not eloquence. It is force. And if you don't believe the founding father, just don't pay your taxes. You'll find out, especially under Biden's new regime, 87,000 more agents, you'll find out what force is like. And you won't like it. So the weaponization of the deep state is, as I say in my book, the single greatest threat to liberty in my lifetime. I think it's always been there, but Trump exposed it because of their hatred. And yet, if you look at the vanquished Liz Cheney, if you look at the 8 out of 10 vanquished, impeached Trump Republicans, if you look at McConnell or, pick your favorite never Trumper, Romney, all they care about is 45. It's disproportionate to the threats we face, which tells you something else has got to be at work here. I'm not quite certain how else you would explain it. And I think I know what's at work here, and that is, despite the press focus on Trump's personality, it is the issues. We don't need to move on from Trump because the party has already moved on from the establishment status quo, and Trump represents the moving on from that. And that's what they really hate. They hate you've got a guy that's putting America first when it comes to trade policy. They're absolute free traders, which means you need global governance, which we don't want. It means that we're going to control the border, which means Democrats can't front load congressional districts and then pass COVID voting rules to keep getting elected and stay in power. It means we're going to stop the endless wars. All of the threats we face, and yet the only border we're concerned about is in Crimea? There's more to being a conservative than wearing a Ukrainian flag lapel pin, for crying out loud. And yet you never know it. Because those particular, you can call them the Wall Street elite if you want. You can call them the swamp. You can call them the carried interest crowd. But they want this form of globalism that makes certain they can farm out cheap labor to China, in some cases, slave labor, that makes certain that their carried interest won't be taxed at ordinary income tax rates, Make certain that the SALT deductions are reinstated for high-tax states. That makes certain that what Eisenhower warned about, the military-industrial complex, keeps the funds flowing. All of those things were represented between the 40-yard lines by Republicans and Democrats. There was really no great debate. Yet John Kerry and Hillary Clinton loving intervention abroad. They love intervention at home. Why wouldn't they love it abroad? You had Bush and Cheney and McCain loving intervention abroad. They all believed in absolute free trade. When it's not free at all, if you're dealing with China. And of course, they all wanted to do an immigration deal that would keep that cheap labor coming into the United States while every other American can't find work. It is the existential crisis. And that's what Trump threatened. And that is why this disproportionate emphasis on the former president is so revealing. You would think we'd be talking about inflation. You'd be think we'd be talking about borders. You'd be think we'd be talking about not one more American life in a foreign war that doesn't have a direct national security interest to the United States. You'd think we'd be talking about CRT in schools and this ridiculous, ridiculous transgender ideology that basically says there's a bunch of sexes, not just two, gaslighting people until they shut up. And by the way, the reason you're labeled as a domestic terrorist is the same reason that communist states abolish free speech or self-censorship. I was reading an article the other day. And this author was quoting the former Czech film director, Miloš Forman. And he lived through communism. And Forman said this, quote, "The worst evil was self-censorship because that twists minds, that destroys your character. That's what they wanted. They wanted everyone to feel guilty. So now, if you post, what, a thoughtless post, why the Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools are going to be very, very upset with you. Why, if you're Alex Berenson in Twitter and you post something about COVID, Twitter's going to be very upset with you. Pretty soon, because the left-wing mob that will protest at your own home, as they've done to the Supreme Court justices and as they did to me when I was in Congress, the mob is trying to get you to self-censor. And that's how they win. And all you have to do, as the great American I know you are, is say, nope, not me. And I think Trump represents that. He won't be censored. And that is why Liz Cheney is flailing away. That is why the news media, instead of interviewing the victor last night, is interviewing the vanquished. They're trying desperately to keep her alive. It's not going to work. It's not going to work because I hope and pray America has had enough. I certainly do. Let's take your calls, by the way. 570-1110. That's 704-570-1110. I'm Jason Lewis. On WBT with me, former Congressman Jason Lewis, filling in for Brent Winterbull. Hey, have you seen the Elvis movie? It really is good, I gotta say, and I'm a huge Elvis fan, but I had to write a piece the other day. In fact, Elvis even made it in my book. Now, you want to talk about a great book. Am I shilling this book enough for you? Party Animal, come to think of it, you know what we ought to do? We ought to do a book signing in the Queen City. Yeah. Let's get to work on that, shall we? That'd be great. My book, Party Animals, got Elvis in it for his restraint when it comes to proselytizing over political matters. We'll get to that a little later and talk about where the movie went wrong politically. Because they kind of tried to portray the king as this sort of woke rock and roller. I got news for you. Elvis Presley was not woke. Maybe we'll have some fun getting to that a little later, but right now talking about a wayward DOJ and the swamp, and hopefully the end of Liz Cheney's political career. But the Cheneys do not go away. They seem to hang on forever and ever and ever, and we'll see what happens going forward. 570-1110, the contact line. Right back to the calls we go. And I believe it's Alan waiting patiently on the Brent Winterble Show to talk with me, Jason Lewis.
How you doing?
Doing fine.
Jason, I'm distraught at how our government is removing the responsibility of citizens to actually participate as citizens. And the fundamental thing that is driving me nuts is the tax. So I, as an employer, collect the taxes from my employees and remit them on the 15th of every month.
Right.
To the point to where my employees really do not ever count on seeing that money ever. So they don't really understand how much they are paying and contributing through their own taxes. So,
well, my friend,
I then have to match Medicaid and Medicare.
Yes, you do.
So just to make the math easy, 7% from the employer, 7% from me.
I think the FICA taxes are 6.2, 6.2 each, employee and employer, and then this, Medicaid or Medicare is another 2.9. So it comes out to be about 15.3% that the employee and the employer are paying, right?
Where, and because the citizens are not generally paying that, they do not understand why it is so important to even consider a different form of taxation in the form of, like, a consumption tax or a transaction tax.
Right. So this is, well, look, you're teeing it up for me here. I can't help but interject. This is where the welfare state always collapses. When you have more people getting more from government than those who are paying in, where do you think the majority of the people are going to cast their ballot in favor of more? They're not paying the full load. Now, when you're talking about withholding, and this is right into my wheelhouse, because something that, and call me a renegade Republican if you want, but when I was serving in Congress and our total annual budget was about $4.2 trillion, of which 75% of that was entitlement. So we had about a $1.2 trillion discretionary budget when I was on the budget committee that we had to formulate by each October. When we were doing that, we would try to reform some of these entitlements, and we did in the 115th. But now, today, you know what that budget is? It is $6 trillion. And it is $6 trillion because of the COVID relief bills and all of the rest. But now you've got Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which is going to add more spending. And that happens because people aren't paying for those. Now, where I'm going with this, real quickly, Alan, is this. We would try to hold down discretionary spending on social welfare. And the Democrats would say, well, if you want a boost in military spending, which Liz Cheney and the Armed Services Committee types always did, then you've got to give us more social spending. And that's where it broke down. And so instead of saying everybody takes some pain and cut the budget, instead it was, well, how about if everybody gets a boost? And that's how we get to this position. And we got to this position because no one wants to do what we have to do, and that's cut across the board. And I mean everything, every department. So now the only way to do that is to have withholding so people don't see it. And by the way, withholding occurred when, Alan? You remember when that was instituted?
It was after World War One.
It was World War II. To your point, Roosevelt knew, and everybody trying to raise money for the war knew, that people would revolt if they saw how much, if they had to write a check every month for their taxes instead of having it automatically deducted, there would be a revolt, wouldn't there?
I would think so. I mean, and we're talking about taxes, but it goes into every other single thing. So let's say one of my employees is getting a divorce and he has child support. The court sends me the order to reduce his pay by whatever it is.
Well, and I mean, what do you think?
He's not responsible for paying his own bill. I'm responsible for paying it for him. And if I don't, guess who gets to pay his bill?
You do.
Me.
Look at the Paycheck Protection Act. We paid employers not to lay people off so unemployment compensation wouldn't go through the roof. But it did anyway. Your points are all good ones, and we appreciate the call as always. Moving on here, let's go to, who is this? Stan has been waiting? Stan, go ahead. You're on WBT.
How are you doing today?
Doing wonderful.
Yeah, I want to talk with you about what the great divide, because they say we're a divided society. What is that really? And in every instance, if you just look at history, what causes a big, great divide in any country is when the government in charge represents specific citizens at the expense of other citizens.
Right.
And so I'm going to give you, there's a lot of hundreds of them, I'm going to give you one. And we can just go back to the civil rights era. You have two types of rights. You have civil rights and constitutional rights. Constitutional rights are natural or God-given. I have a right to defend myself. Okay, but civil rights are rights the government gives you. And just like money, the government can't give you something unless it takes it from someone else first. So in essence, instead of equality, what the civil rights period really did is it basically mandated that people not in those specific groups treat the other groups special or differently. And that's why you can get into the city of Charlotte today and you want to get a contract with the city of Charlotte. The first thing they do is they want to know your MWBE status, because they actually treat women and business, women and minority-owned firms special or differently.
There were there was a school district here in Minnesota that said, if we're going to lay off teachers, we're going to lay off white teachers first. That is not equal protection under the law, and that's something we do need to discuss when we come back, because it's at the heart of this anti-Trumpism, believe it or not. Mentioned that Trump is such a threat to the swamp and to the group of establishment Republicans and Democrats that play between the 40-yard lines in Washington. I saw them. That he must be vanquished no matter what. So, you know, a couple of impeachments later, they're trying to now indict him. And that's the end goal, to get an indictment before the midterms. And they could probably do it in the District of Columbia, but it won't hold on appeal. They will do and say anything to stop someone, which is the hallmark of totalitarianism. When you weaponize the government to go after the government's political opponents, you have given up liberty for oppression, for tyranny. And that is where we are with this Never Trump crowd. And it's happening because he's conducting a paradigm shift in public policy. And we are going back to the roots of the founding fathers, to which we have drifted in a century of warfare and big government. The 20th century, if nothing else, is the century of war and big government, and the two go hand in hand. If you take a look at Woodrow Wilson, and remember the Espionage Act? Why, that supposedly is what they were using to go after Trump's Mar-a-Lago personal residence. Now, the Espionage Act is a World War I relic to shut up the critics of World War I. Believe it or not, there were a lot of people that did not want to get involved. And so what they did is they cut the communications across the Atlantic. George Creel came up with a public information committee that would censor anybody else. Woodrow Wilson signed the Espionage Act that said, if you said certain things that weren't the right thing to say, we could throw you in jail. And it's not a coincidence that that unconstitutional act called the Espionage Act was invoked in the Mar-a-Lago raid. When government is growing, when government cannot countenance any dissent, they crack down on dissenters. And so what Trump was basically standing for and is standing for is saying, wait. Let's go back and rethink some of these endless wars. In fact, it was the aftermath of World War I that almost guaranteed World War II. The reparations for Germany, the London Naval Accord, the Treaty of Versailles. Even the war proponent said, you know, if we make it impossible for the Germans to field an army, defend themselves, and demand these reparations, they're going to be just ripe for a demagogue like Adolf Hitler, and sure enough, they were. But then we've had war after war after war, and it wasn't until Dwight Eisenhower, who refused to get involved in the Suez Canal crisis, or even, for that matter, Ronald Reagan, who said, no, I'm not sending troops to Nicaragua. And when the barracks got bombed in Lebanon, he got us the hell out of there. Trump is revisiting that. Now, the establishment calls it isolationism. Yeah, oh, no, no, we can't. How many times have you heard this? We have to be a leader in the world. We have to have a new world order. We have to lead multilaterally. That's code. Those are euphemisms for globalism. And Trump says, no, America first. Well, he says, as president, I represent the country, not the world, not the United Nations. And the left that wants agreements so they can farm out labor to China, so they can manufacture across the pond where it's cheaper. The establishment left and right, to be fair. The Wall Street crowd, who cares about institutional investments. BlackRock, who cares about ESG so they can subsidize green companies at the expense of fossil fuel companies. They want this. Trump does not. And this swamp is trying to destroy him over it. And they will use any means to do it. Which brings us to this Merrick Garland corrupt Department of Justice. They invoke the Espionage Act, which is nothing more than a censorious attack on free speech. But worse than that, if Garland said, oh gosh, Trump's got nuclear secrets in Mar-a-Lago, why did it take weeks and weeks and weeks when he could have blown up the world for these people to finally execute a warrant? Why was the execution led not from Florida, but from Washington, D.C.? By the same culprits at the FBI and the DOJ that were involved in the Michigan entrapment case, that were involved in the January 6th witch hunt. They were the same ones involved in the raid. And why did it that first it was leaked that Garland didn't know about it. It was a routine. Well, then Garland had to come clean. So, well, OK, I knew about it. I okayed it. Now it's Biden didn't know about it. Yeah, right. And Biden didn't know about the DOJ spying on Trump either. Right. Well, he did, actually. He was in on the meeting and I'm sure he knew about this. So now you have literally. The party in power trying to put in jail the party out of power. Does that sound like a free country? And when it comes to, as the previous caller mentioned, the equal protection under the law, which really was the hallmark of the civil rights movement, that's been turned on its head. Diversity, inclusion, equity stands for, we're now going to engage in racism, this time against white people. And do you think I make that up? Think twice. There was a school district saying, we will only lay off non-diverse teachers first. Now, it's not going to hold up under our legal system as it stands now. It's clearly a race-based classification. But that's where we're headed. And it's really important, believe it or not, you can circle it all the way back to the endless arguments justifying the attack on Trump when people say, well, what about Hillary's classified information? What about Sandy Berger? And they say, well, two wrongs don't make a right. Just because those people did that doesn't mean Trump shouldn't be prosecuted. Well, yes, it does if they're not prosecuted. Two wrongs don't make a right unless we fail to prosecute the first wrong. And if you don't do that, you don't have people being treated alike under the law, which is a violation of the 14th Amendment and the very essence of being an American. Okay, we are back on News Talk 1110 WBT with me, Jason Lewis, filling in for Brent Winterbull. Brent will be back tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. But right now, right to the phones we go at 704-570-1110. First up, Corey, waiting patiently in Charlotte. Thanks, Corey.
Hey, sir, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Yes, sir. Full disclosure, I am not a Democrat nor a Republican. But you caught my attention when you were talking about the Espionage Act, how it was designed to do this and the third with opposite party, quote unquote. But is that not the same format or tactic they're using for conspiracy theorists online now?
It's exactly the same. It's government propaganda. And what you had until the assassination occurred in Sarajevo, there was a whole lot of people that did not want to get involved in World War One. This is they thought it was a European war, and Woodrow Wilson campaigned on a pledge to keep us out of war, kept the peace at home, the man who kept us out of war. Then all of a sudden, as soon as he got elected, all of a sudden it was he was going to save the world or save democracy for the world, and he got us into war, and there was a lot of opposition. So they basically enacted, there was a guy named George Creel, and his public information committee was an exercise in agitprop. And then they had censors around saying these people can't talk against the war. And they passed a patently unconstitutional act, in my view, called the Espionage Act, which said if you are saying things that were state secrets, even though if you didn't steal any classified information, you just came across it and you published it, why, then you could be prosecuted. And this is what they were doing to clamp down on free speech. And they're doing the same thing today. And that's very scary.
Because you can't talk about 9/11 without being called a conspiracy theorist, the moon landing, Diana. We're going to jail soon if we start trying to talk.
If you don't believe that stuff, and I'll be honest with you, I don't believe those conspiracy theories. But the best way to fight them is with other speech. It's never to have government saying, you can't have an opinion. You can't have an opinion that says there were irregularities in the 2020 election, or you can't have an opinion that says, the cattle mutilations out there that Tucker Carlson's talking about right now, why that's just a conspiracy. No, I think it's true. No, you can't say that. That's why they label everything as a conspiracy in order to criminalize it. And that is very, very dangerous stuff. Yeah, well, I mean, right, we're seeing some of this stuff.
It is a deterrent. It stops you from looking for stuff.
Yes, and that's it stops you in the quest for the truth. Corey, thanks for calling. Appreciate the comments. Here's Terry up next on WBT with me, Jason Lewis. Hi.
Hello, Congressman.
How are you, sir?
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your service.
Well, thank you.
My comment is, and I can't remember for the life of me who said it, I think it was Jefferson, but my comment is, and you probably know who this quote is from, and I hope it does not come to this, but he said the tree of freedom cannot grow unless it is watered occasionally by the blood of its patriots.
Yeah, I mean, it's liberty requires eternal vigilance and all of that Jefferson said. He also said at one point that the positive law was not man's highest obligation, but to save your country when in peril was. And this is the real danger in what they're doing by shutting down the opposition, by locking up people who were trespassing on January 6th without due process, while trying to cancel people who disagree with the government, raiding an ex-president. They are making it, it was Kennedy of all people. I think one of the best lines ever was, those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable.
Oh, man, that's great.
And that's why what they're doing is so dangerous.
I agree. And that's my comment. I'll listen to your issues. You're doing great.
Well, you know, I'm just kind of a newbie at this sort of thing. So we're just, getting through the best we can.
Okay, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Let's let's see. We're almost up against the clock, but I think we can squeeze in. Is it Dean? Is he the one next?
Hey there, Keith. Great to talk to you. I've been in Charlotte since 2001. Great to talk to you again.
Well, that's great. I appreciate it, Bob. No, actually, I'm Jason, Dean.
And so, Jason, sorry. Your point, you made the prediction already of how the left will defend themselves starting in 2023 about, oh, you're just prosecuting your political enemies when we start to call out publicly and investigate everything they've been doing since 2016. And with the way the press blacks out anything that's not in their agenda, again, we're going to be stuck.
Well, they already are. They already are. I mean, right. After the raid, what did MSNBC and CNN and Vox and The Atlantic and all of the organs of the establishment say? It's very dangerous what these anti-raid people are saying. So they crack down on your liberties, and then when you complain, that's further proof that they need to crack down further. That is not going to end well. Hey, let's talk about the Elvis movie next hour, too. I saw it the other day, and let's have a chit-chat. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. I'm Jason Lewis. One more hour coming up on the Brent Winterbull Show. Stick around, gang.
A man that I've known, a man that is tough and smart, a man that's running against somebody that's never done a damn thing in the Senate, Mr. Jason Lewis.
Well, thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Frankie Lane. Hey, speaking of great voices like that Boomer Von Cannon, this Frankie Lane guy, the late, great Frankie Lane, who sang Rawhide and, of course, my theme song on the radio for 25 years, Blazing Saddles, a movie which could not be made today because of the censors out there in the entertainment world. Speaking of which, I want to get to this, and we can continue with the corrupt DOJ, the swamp, and the demise of Liz Cheney. I do want to continue with that. In fact, there's a question as to whether or not we should even have a national police force. Should we abolish the FBI? But speaking of entertainment, did you see the Elvis movie? Now, I happen to be an Elvis aficionado. In fact, when I was doing this job full time, I used to take once a year listeners down to Graceland in Memphis, or in your case, over to Memphis. In Minnesota, it's down to Memphis. But I used to take listeners over there, and we'd go through Elvis Week in August, which is going on right now, and visit this shrine to the King of Rock and Roll. And I also had the chance to see Elvis not long before he assumed room temperature, as they say. And he was still great to watch in concert. So I'm a big fan of the King. And so I wanted to see this movie, Elvis. And it's doing very well, and it should, because it really was a good movie. It was fun to watch. It was well done. Austin Butler just knocked it out of the park as an impersonator, not even impersonator, just the little quirks that the King had on stage and off. He really did a great job. So it was a fun couple of hours to watch. And it was tragic in the end, as we all know. In fact, just now, if you're an Elvis fan, are physicians, a couple of new books out about all of the maladies that had befallen Elvis Presley. I mean, we're talking about autoimmune disorder. We're talking about degenerative diseases. We're talking about genetic defects that put this guy in near constant pain. And it's shedding an entire new light on why he became hooked on prescription drugs. It was not just because of his zeal to get high. It was the only method available. I'm not justifying it, don't get me wrong. But it becomes more understandable as to why he became reliant upon all of these painkillers. Some fascinating developments medically. I think one book is called The Strange Medical Saga of Elvis Presley by Forrest Tennant, who's a physician out in L.A. There's another one, Destined to Die Young, by a woman up in Michigan. But they're quite good. But the movie, and you knew this was coming, right? We live in an era of wokeism. You can't go anywhere, especially in corporate America and in legacy media, without, you know, worshiping at the shrine of diversity, inclusion, and equity. It's pervasive throughout education. And school is starting up soon, and pretty soon your kids will come home, and they won't learn how to read and write. They won't learn compound interest, but by God, they'll learn how to hate America. Well, let me tell you something, friends. Elvis Presley would have none of it. Elvis was the gun-toting patriot of the entertainment world. And if you watch this movie, none of that is shown. He looks like he's a BML activist or BLM activist, right? The man loved badges and firearms. He was not a progressive. I interviewed Joe Esposito. Now, again, Joe became a good friend before he passed on. But he met Elvis in the Army and became his tour manager and was the guy that Elvis's girlfriend at the time called to see what was wrong with Elvis on that fateful morning 45 years ago. So Joe told me in an interview on the radio that Elvis was a conservative. There wasn't any question about it. He sang the Battle Hymn of the Republic and Dixie, both on stage. He flew to Washington under a pseudonym to meet with President Nixon because he wanted to be a federal agent at large and go after the SDS and the drug culture and the hippies of the day. At the height of his popularity, Uncle Sam came calling, and he didn't try to dodge the draft. He went into the Army. And yet, in the movie, none of this is there. He's woke. He's a woke Elvis. Now, that may be a little bit overstated, but they made him this sort of icon of diversity in the movie. And there's no question that Elvis would not be Elvis had he not blended rock with gospel and blues that were a part of the black community where he grew up. No question about that. But that doesn't mean the guy didn't love America. He loved America. He was a patriot. He was a super patriot. And he also loved guns and badges. So I was a little disappointed in that. But other than that, the way that Baz Luhrmann weaves the narrative, and he certainly makes Colonel Tom Parker out to be the bad guy. There's no question about that. But what was redeeming about the movie, I do have to say, was the struggle Presley had. And I think one of the reasons that Elvis still matters this late into or early into the 21st century, the next century, is for two reasons. One, the music can't be beat. Just can't be beat. Go back and listen to, there was a CD issued years ago called Elvis 30 number one, was it? Elvis 30 number one hits or something like that. It's unbelievably good, still to this day. However, the other aspect is sort of the Horatio Alger aspect or I think the quintessential American dream that a poor kid from Tupelo, Mississippi discovered, but underneath the veneer, it was never as easy as it looked. In fact, it was very difficult. It was kind of miserable in many ways. And I do think that we have a tendency to look at superstars or successful businessmen and women or politicians, the good ones anyway, or, you know, pick your favorite quarterback. And they make it all look so easy. Why? They're a natural. When, like the duck swimming on the surface of the pond, everything's calm above, but below the surface of the water is little paddles are going like hell. That's what it takes. And Presley reached this stardom, but it wasn't ever as easy as it looked. And I think that's what's kind of important about these sorts of stories. But anyway, if you saw the movie, feel free to let us know what you thought of it. This, but it'll do. Back with the talk show host formerly known as Congressman Jason Lewis in for Brent Winterbull on WBT. So glad to drive you home today on this Wednesday, August 17th. You know, speaking of which, 45 years ago yesterday, the king left the building, and I'm such an Elvis fan, I put him in the book. So I got a chapter in my new book, Party Animal. Yes, I want you to buy it. The Truth About President Trump, Power Politics, and the Partisan Press. The book's called Party Animal, and in it I've got a chapter called The Echo Chambers. And this is how the Democrat media complex operates. They have some scurrilous outfit. It could be BuzzFeed. It could be anybody online. They did it with the false Russian dossier. They print a falsehood, and then CNN says, well, it's out there, so we've got to run with the story. And then all of the echo chambers keep gaslighting by repeating the lie over and over and over again. And pretty soon, why Trump's colluding with Russia when none of it, as we now know, is true. It's the echo chamber. And part and parcel of that is the Leonardo DiCaprio Hollywood crowd. You know, the Learjet liberals who hype about climate change and call you a climate denier, and you're going to be silenced and put in jail next, by the way, while he's traveling around on a private plane. It's Hollywood gone crazy. Hollywood gone woke. Well, the king, Elvis Presley, would have none of it. Would have none of it. Not only was he a gun-toting patriot, but Elvis didn't think it was his place to comment on the politics of the day, even though we know what he would have thought of Jane Fonda. So I've got this passage in my book, Party Animal, where Elvis was asked at the famous 1972 Madison Square Garden press conference. So he's setting these records at Madison Square Garden in the summer of 72, filling the place, two shows a day, one after another. And he held a press conference, and he was asked, what do you think of the anti-war antics of people like Jane Fonda? Do you approve? Do you disapprove? What do you think? And the lady kept badgering him. And finally, Presley interrupts and says, honey, which is a great way to disarm her at the time. They'd be outraged today. But you know, the more they get outraged, the more you got to keep doing it, folks. Do not capitulate ever, ever. If it offends them, you're right over the target. Elvis goes, honey, I'd just soon rather not tell you my views about that. I'm just an entertainer. I just as soon keep the views of that to myself. I'm just an entertainer. How refreshing is that? Can you imagine anybody in Hollywood saying that today? I tell you, he'll always be the king. The late greats, Elvis Presley. Also talking about the raid at Mar-a-Lago a little bit more and whether or not after the Russian collusion, the false Russian dossier, the lies by the DOJ, Strzok and Page deliberately trying to use the law and the power of force to thwart the will of the people, whether it just isn't time to abolish the FBI. There are people saying that now. And, you know, there's a more than a grain of truth in this because the founding fathers were terrified of a national police force. They wouldn't have it. They wouldn't have that any more than a standing army because they knew what King George was doing with that. There were no Fourth Amendment rights. Soldiers were being quartered at people's homes against their will. There was no search warrant, no probable cause, no burden of proof. And so the framers wanted the power of the police, as it's called, legally, constitutionally, to be relegated to the states closer to home where people could control it. They did not believe in a Gestapo-like, Stasi-like national police force. So there was no FBI at the founding. There was no national police. Now we have, even though the Constitution mentions three crimes, we have a federal criminal code with thousands of federal crimes, and guess who's going to enforce it? The FBI, the Department of Justice. So now some people are openly wondering whether it's time, its heyday hasn't come and gone. I think it's an interesting point that needs to be addressed. 704-570-1110. Drew, thanks for waiting. You're on WBT. Earth to Drew? I don't believe Drew's there. Let's try Tara on 99.3 and News Talk 1110 WBT. Go ahead, Tara.
Hey, I miss you a lot. I've been here in Charlotte forever, and we miss you a lot. But why aren't conservatives getting their message across? Secondly, why do we feel like we're defeated? We always feel like we're defeated, and yeah, we're like crumbling, you know, we're climbing up that hill. I feel like all.
But we're always told to rise above and turn the other cheek. They can call you a racist. They can call you a xenophobe. Yep. They can call you a domestic. And you're supposed to just sit there and turn the other cheek and don't get down in the dirt like Trump does, right?
Right.
Yeah, well, it's a path to irrelevancy. And think about this. I'll pick on the Senate because I'm a little bitter still. My race, when I was running for the Senate here in Minnesota, I was neck and neck in late October. One poll up here had us at 1 point, right? Do you think the National Republican Senatorial Committee gave a damn about Minnesota? Nope, they wrote us off. And that comes directly from people like Mitch McConnell. And so instead of outraged over January 6th, that committee's refusal to investigate due process violations or Ashley Babbitt or anything else, or the raid, what are the Senate Republicans working on? Well, they helped Joe Biden pass the semiconductor bill. They helped Joe Biden pass the infrastructure bill. We've had 5 COVID relief bills. These are the Republicans we're supposed to work for?
Well, I'm going to ask you something real quick. Are we too smart for them? Because I don't think they understand the Constitution. I don't think they understand laws. And that it's funny that they want to pass more laws when our laws that we have passed do not work.
Or they're not enforced. The party's in the midst of sort of a cum flushing, as they say in radio. It's switching over. And the establishment does not like that. In fact, they hate that. And I think that's why there's so much angst within the Republican Party and why Liz Cheney went down to ignominious defeat last night.
Congratulations, Good Morning DT. The number one morning show in Charlotte.
It's a pleasure filling in for Brent Winterbull today. Jason Lewis here, an old WBT host, and I do mean old. Emphasis on the old, my friends. But I was so old. I am so old. I remember when Elvis played the Charlotte Coliseum, and I think it wasn't that long before he passed on. So that's how far I go back, Charlotte and WBT. Always good to talk with all of you, and we've still got a little more time left, so feel free to call 704-570-1110. That's News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Contact line is always 704-570-1110. I've been hitting on a lot of things today, and certainly there's a lot of things to hit on because of all the commotion, but I do believe that Trump is, as I said before, nothing less than a disruptor in politics. Just the way the digital age has changed newspapers, and for that matter, broadcasting. Trump is changing politics. The old form is going by the wayside. And you've got to understand, as Tara said, I do think that rank and file Republicans and a good swath of independents and a few Democrats are tired of playing between the 40-yard lines between Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell. They're two sides of the same coin. And that they're people are... Now, I'm not suggesting that you can't work with the other side. I certainly did when I was in Congress. And you can't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. But no one's talking about a compromise on juvenile justice or a compromise on the farm bill or a compromise on infrastructure. What people are talking about and worried about is America first. And that's what Trump has really tapped into. That is, are we enacting policy that benefits the average American, or are we enacting policy that benefits the elite? This whole notion that Republicans represent the rich guys and Democrats the poor guys ought to be seen for what it is after the Inflation Reduction Act, which is malarkey. If the Democrats really wanted to tax the rich, then in this bill, they would have taxed carried interest on Wall Street. They wouldn't have flirted with the idea of restoring the SALT deductions. You see, there are two taxes that the rich pay, or the rich don't pay, that Democrats are doing their bidding on. And so this whole notion that they don't represent Wall Street or the wealthy is a bunch of malarkey. And as I say, the taxes are, one, the state and local taxes, otherwise called SALT. When I was in Congress, we passed the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, and we undid the subsidy for high-tax states. If you live in New York or California or Minnesota, and you're paying 9, 10, 11% state income taxes, and North Carolina is getting up there, why, you could write those off your federal tax return. Well, who do you think that benefited? It benefited the uber wealthy in New York and California and North Carolina and Minnesota and Illinois. Their state bill wasn't as high as it otherwise could be because anything they paid to state government, to Raleigh, they could write off on the feds. Well, why should you, as a taxpayer, subsidize the rich or high-tax states? So we took it out, or we limited it to $10,000 SALT deduction. The Democrats are trying to stick it back in. The Democrats are trying to stick SALT back in to give wealthy taxpayers in North Carolina a federal tax benefit. That's one. Two, carried interest. When you have these Mitt Romney-style private equity Republicans and Democrats, and they're looking out for their buddies on Wall Street, one of the ways they do that is they don't tax income for private equity firms or investment firms that do private equity or do like BlackRock, you name it. So what they do is if you give your money to a company and they invest it in another company, if you get a gain from that, that's a capital gain. It's your money, you put at risk. But what these companies do, these private equity companies, is they take this your money and they say, well, look, we're going to keep 10, 15, 20%, whatever the figure might be. They have 2% fees on top of it. But if we're going to take your money and we're going to slice off part of that for us, now they're not investing their money. They're taking your money and investing it. And so when they get a gain on that, why is that a capital gain? That's called carried interest. That should be taxed at ordinary income rates. The Democrats are, in their bill, fought to keep that in there, that break for Wall Street. And now, with 87,000 new IRS agents, you don't think the middle class, and even the poor in some cases, but the middle class are going to get audited under this Biden bill? Well, think again. The CBO has already said that if you audit people making less than $400,000 a year, you'll get another $20 billion in federal revenue from the Inflation Reduction Act. Well, wait a minute. I thought they weren't taxing those people. There simply isn't enough revenue. There's not enough revenue at the top 1%, the top half percent, to spend $6 trillion that the federal government spends each and every year now. And because of that, I can guarantee you the Inflation Reduction Act that adds all of these politically motivated IRS agents will come after you. And if you don't think that's true, Google Lois Lerner sometime. So it's a very, very scary moment when we have weaponized the government, the power of force, on behalf of one group or one ideology. That is antithetical to the American experiment. It's the antithesis of a free country. And I do think, if you look at Cheney's defeat last night, the American people have woken up to this, which is why Trump's enduring appeal is not dissipating. In fact, it's comical. The Democrat left and the Republican left have done more than anybody else to encourage support for Trump by the January 6th committee, by the FBI raids, by constantly putting forth this false narrative. And people have woken up in a good sort of way, I do believe. And so regardless of what happens to the former president, this America First movement is not going anywhere. I guarantee it. At WBT. Let's see, we got Bo, Beth, Vince, Peter, Brett. Sounds like a really bad law firm. But no, it's your daily lineup right here on News Talk 1110 WBT 99.3. And I am Jason Lewis, formerly of News Talk 1110 WBT. Glad to be back filling in for Brett today. He'll be back tomorrow, so hang tight, everybody, and the rest of the gang. And Charlotte's number one morning show, I might add, Bo and Beth, tomorrow morning will kick things off. So, lots to look forward to, as they say. You know, I was talking a little bit about BlackRock, and this is something that is rather, I think, intriguing, has a philosophical and economic matter, and that is this sort of corporatism taking the place of capitalism. And what the knee-jerk reaction from the establishment to Trump was, well, he's not really a conservative. He's not for a pure free market. And you hear that once in a while from libertarians who are really liberals posing as libertarians so they can hate Trump. And the problem is, we don't have capitalism right now. We have corporatism, where the corporate state reigns supreme. Look at this latest bill. It is a total massive bailout to the green energy lobby. So if you are a solar farm, if you're making, you know, lithium batteries, well, not lithium batteries, any kind of batteries in some cases, but if you're windmills, you're getting this massive subsidy and we're raising penalties and regulations and taxes on another industry. That's not capitalism. That's central planning. And central planning, as Hayek and others have shown time and time again, is the fatal conceit. It never, ever works. Go out and read Henry Hazlitt's classic little book called Economics in One Lesson. You'll understand why central planning doesn't work. These bureaucrats cannot possibly know the individual decisions of millions of people and what should be made and what should, the wants and the needs of the masses. They have their own wants and needs. And that's why I write in my book, Party Animal, we need term limits. And if you can vote, you ought not contribute. There's so much dark money floating around out there that, and you can see it on these commercials, when it's not, you don't recognize the group. The group paying for this is, the Citizens for a Better America. Who's that? So what we've got to do is, and this is what Trump was talking about, really was take back our economy from the Rasputins on Wall Street who are really guiding it. And you can't think of anything more than BlackRock. BlackRock is this massive investment firm that controls trillions of dollars. And they are now trying to implement something called ESG investing. I think it's environmental, social, whatever the last one word is. But basically, it's a left-wing demand instead of a fiduciary responsibility for the highest return, ESG investing will count, let's say, climate reduction or climate emissions reduction has a return on investment. So you might have your retirement account being invested by BlackRock, or BlackRock might own the majority of shares in a company and telling that company, we want you to do ESG investing. And the problem with this, of course, is that that supplants the fiduciary responsibility of your custodial firm, whoever it might be, into getting you the highest return with a politically correct woke agenda. So what they want to do is literally recalculate the ROI on a particular investment to include diversity, equity, climate. So you have two mutual funds or two investment firms. One gets a 10% return for your money. The other one only gets a 5% return. Which one are you going to invest with? Well, I'll go with the 10% return. No, no. They're going to require a new way to calculate this. So the firm with a 5% return, as opposed to a 10% return, gets to count its climate emission reductions in that return. So that adds 2 points. It's got a diverse corporate board, so that adds another 2 points. And then they would report, well, really, our return is 10% too, when it really isn't. This is what groups like BlackRock and others are doing. This is what I mean in the book when I say our institutions have been captured by a new radical woke left. And it's not just public bureaucrats. It's not just liberal school teachers. It's not just pick your favorite liberal group. It is corporate America. It is Wall Street. It's even the military. And when all these institutions are captured by one ideology, you need one person at least willing to stand up and tell you what's happening. And I think that's what Trump has been doing. And that's why after last night's massive defeat of the poster child of anti-Trumpism, Liz Cheney, it's still resonating. Hey, everybody, it's been a pleasure. Always is. I'm Jason Lewis. We'll see you next time. Stay tuned right here to News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Have a great evening, everybody. While I can talk.